Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy very hot Tuesday. Tomorrow's going to be worse. Thursday's going to be worse than that. And Dave Murray says Friday should be a high of 85, lower humidity, and around 80 for the weekend. That's great. St. Louis, what are you going to do? We have the think tank today. Do it a couple times a month. We have Jeff Rainford and David Barklage with us. And we're talking about how you guys couldn't be more different, but you're kind of a match set. Maybe just because I always see you together. Yeah. But you're sort of, you know, like Buck Owens and Roy Clark on Hee Haw or something like that.
He's Buck.
I can't play anything. No, David and I disagree on a lot of things, but he is of the kind of Republican. First of all, I really think Republicans and Democrats have to figure out how to get along in this country or we ain't going to have a free country. But I also, he is a Republican who I think is like a traditional conservative, which means he loves the country. He just sees economics differently than I do, which to me is an honest disagreement of opinion versus MAGA, which I think is a real where I have a problem with MAGA is I think they disagree on how to be an American. He and I agree on how to be an American. We just disagree in the details.
Wow. Let's hold on. That was really something. First of all, I agree with you. Wasn't it? It just seems so quaint to think of the days when, you know, Clinton wanted more taxes, but Bush wanted, and you're like, what?
Or,
you know,
or Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill was the example. They could not have been more different political ideology, but I think they both probably came from similar backgrounds, but they both saw America the same way. They just saw how you do the economics and how you run the government
differently. But you just said that to you, and I want to get Dave's reaction to this, MAGA is more about disagreeing on how to be an American.
Correct. And who is an American and who is a real American?
I'll go back. Jeff has taught me more as a person who's been in politics for 40 years, running hundreds and hundreds of campaigns about Democrat politics than any professor or anybody else in my life. I have learned more about the infrastructure, how they make decisions, how urban politics works, how a single party works. And so he taught me everything I didn't even know that I didn't know. And so I have great respect for that. I think we both agree that what has happened is the de-evolution of elements of our party, whether it is because of the internet and the algorithms, whether it's special interest groups weaponizing issues, whatever it is, we both have a group in each party that are basically 1 minute away from anarchy. And if you look at the far left and the far right, whether they're MAGA or progressives, they almost seem like the same thing. And we're seeing that, evolution or de-evolution on like data centers where you have the far left and the far right on the same issue, but it's just about blowing it up without any consequence, without any, the violence problem. We're seeing that violence is an acceptable behavior in polling by people under the age of 30 for the first time. And so we're seeing violence more prevalent. We're seeing no engagement for anything, any conclusion of anything good. It's all just about blowing it up. It can never be good enough. So we're going to just destroy it.
Yeah, I 100% believe that countries are strong when their citizens cooperate. So in Russia, you cooperate or Putin will poison your food. In China, you cooperate or they'll shoot you. In the United States, we are free to cooperate or not cooperate. And for 200 years, we cooperated with each other, even when we didn't agree with each other or like each other. I mean, there are 300 million people in America I have to cooperate with, and I know about 1,000 of them. So we're cooperating with strangers. That day seems to be coming to an end, and there are even Americans who say that liberal democracy is now a dying thing, and that one way or the other, we're going to need autocracy.
Can I Ray, jump in?
I'm going to fight that like crazy.
Sounds dead on.
I know. I'm
I mean, there's nothing to add. No notes.
And guys, look, is our country really worse off? I mean, look, I do believe growing up in the 60s, 70s, we had a neighborhood like 80 kids and everyone went over to everybody's house. You didn't worry about crime or those kinds of things. But the advancements of medicine, the advancements of so many areas, what it has done to quality of life, the access to food and other kinds of things. Yeah, we have our problems. But I would argue that our country, after 250 years, is an incredible place to live where you can have Jews and Muslims and Sunnis and Eastern Orthodox all living within blocks of each other and never having a fight. And you know, the media amplifies because there's not enough stories, you know, that they want to give. So they amplify and make a lot of things, I think, out of proportion, which again adds a level of discontent among people because they're getting feeds on their social media of one kind of daily diet of something that feeds their anxiety, their weakness, or maybe, you know, their anger.
Here's a great example. So you guys know Ryan Wiggins, who's on Annie's show down at 97.1. And he was on my show for a year. I know him well. He's a devout Christian. He's a solid conservative. I like him a lot. Smart guy. But we disagree on a lot of things. And yesterday he was on the show, or Monday, and we were talking off the air. I said, man, how about Trump blowing up with Kristen Welker, Meet the Press? And he looks at me and he goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because Fox didn't cover it.
Yeah. Right.
And it really hit me like, maybe I'm not hearing.
Hey, I've got some for you. Sometime when you're at a person's house or friend's house, go onto their Prime or their Netflix, but like Prime. I have
different. It's getting creepy, Dave.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting ready to say. So my sister and my family, we were down on Florida on the coast, and everybody had just loaded in their different, Prime. And I get on my sister's, and it's all about, you know, all these love things and dating things and different stuff. I get on my niece's. It's all different. It is amazing how they tailor it. Just you wouldn't even realize that on like Prime you're doing it. You know and suspect they're doing the internet. But you're right. I don't even know where I go for news anymore, because when I turn on any station, it is just loud opinion and I'm not hearing any news, and I miss things and I try to plug myself in.
But here's another example. I can't stand Trump. I don't think my good friend Rachel likes him. But Rach also gets crazy about CNN. It's on in our office, and she'll just be like, I can't take it. I have to go for a walk.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's just the same conversation over and over again. And it's like, guess what we've caught him doing? And it's like, well, it makes no difference anyway. So why don't you talk about like policy or something that actually matters? I'm just sick of talking about his behavior. I don't really care about his behavior anymore. Like Ryan said yesterday, it doesn't make a difference. So why do I need to like obsess about it and get upset about it all the time?
Yeah, well, you know my view on this. I don't think any of it's accidental.
No, of course not.
I think people in power know that the best way to stay in power, and I don't just mean politicians, I mean wealthy people, I mean people that don't even want their names in the public. As long as we're all fighting each other, we're not bothering them. And that's what they care about. And that's why all of the TV and the radio, the stuff that we're talking about, where it's entirely about fear. Fear is the most powerful motivator in the world because it's straight to our survival instinct. If you make people afraid, you'll make them angry. And those two things are connected. And that's why we're all at each other's throats, because we're being encouraged to fight each other rather than looking up and going, nah, these are the people that are actually abusing us.
Well, and think about this. All the sociologists, psychologists, that whole industry has been hired by internet companies, by high tech, and they have developed such extensive algorithms and data points. Mm-hmm. Imagine the amount of data points. And look, AI scares me. I think it's different to data centers because people confuse the fact that they want 400 apps in their phone and how that's going to be able to process. You need data centers for that. AI, advanced AI is a totally different discussion. But what is happening is clearly we are weaponizing our communities by some of these players. And I don't know if they're the players you think, but I think we all know someone is. I don't know why the military or others, I understand freedom of speech, but why they're allowing these weapons to be used on American people. Because every day I have to hold back to talk to people because they're just so emotional about it. And I can't even understand it. I mean, I am unplugged from social media because I don't want that biased. I don't want to be bombarded with one view.
Yeah, I try to go out of my way not just meet and talk, but to be friends with people who think differently with me, not just Republicans. You know, I grew up in a Webster Groves in a lily white neighborhood. I tried to go out of my way to hear, to meet, to having coffee this afternoon or drinks this afternoon with a guy who's African-American. I'm married with a child, but, you know, I try to go out of my way to get to know, to be friends with, people who are gay, just people who are different than me, not so I can pat myself on the back back and go, oh, aren't I special? But so I don't fall into this trap of becoming tribal, and I fall into my tribe as a Democrat or a white male who's supposed to be aggrieved or whatever, and try to, and same thing with what I read. I read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal every day, and they have very different opinions and things. I do think both of them are legitimate news organizations and legitimately believe in free press in America. So I don't watch CNN, I don't watch MSNBC, and I don't watch Fox because I think they're just telling people what they want to hear to work
you know
them up.
When the end game is? The end game is that it's not what it's just doing to individuals, but policymakers. It is so divisive that now, whether you're on the city council, the St. Louis City debates all kinds of things other than crime and better roads and things like that. The state legislature gets into cultural wars and other kinds of reactions to things rather than dealing with education and highways and other critical issues. Everybody is becoming a ground for discussion of the same algorithms that they're being fed before they go to these meetings, and then missing the things that are important to running this nation, running the community, and taking care of families.
It's another great point, Dave, because you know, the 10 years that I was a lawyer and I did a lot of mediation, and you're right. I think we're really being shortchanged, especially on policy, because we're just getting one side or the other. And in my experience, that's usually not the best policy. The policy is typically somewhere in between. Doesn't always mean you have to go down the middle, but someone's usually a little more right than the other one, but not all the way right. But you know, the last
take immigration. What we were offered before was either Democrats, which are we're going to have open borders, or Trump, who is not only going to close the border but throw people who are here legally and legitimately out and try and whiten the country. What most people want is they want the border control, but they want immigration. Americans, and we're a country of immigrants, and we have been at this argument for about 10 years now. There's logical ways to do it, to let many, many more people in, but let them in legally, and yet we don't do it because the one side is we're going to close the border and kick everybody out, and the other is we're going to have open borders. Well, how do you get reality when that's your politics?
Quick break, back with more with the Think Tank with Jeff Rainford and David Barklage after this. Guys, DGS on KMOX 423. Jeff Rainford, David Barklage are here for the Think Tank. I had a topic, a political topic, but now I just want to talk about sports because that's what you guys... I'll just say this about sports. So, like you guys, I played my whole life, Little League, Cory League, the whole bit. Loved it. Loved every minute of it. You know, I wasn't good enough. Like, I ran track in college, but I don't think I was good enough to play ball in college. But, I got to see it. And Phoebe, just one generation later, was really good at ice skating and tennis. And I loved both of her instructors. They weren't trying to scam us in any way. But when she was like 7, they're like, hey, just so you know, your daughter has some real talent. But if you want her to really be something, you got to get her out of this class and get her into private. Like, just we're doing that so early, it seems like, with the kids. Kev, you're the.
Well, the problem that I have with all of it is, some people will tell you that, but it's not necessarily true. We're just talking about the odds. I don't know of many kids, barring kids who grow up with parents that played professional sports or have the specific knowledge themselves to train their own kids. It's so hard to keep up because the systems have advanced so much. The evaluation systems, the recruiting has changed. There are standards that are being, and it doesn't matter what sport it is. There are standards that are in place from the higher levels, high school, college, pro, that are pretty hard and fast. And if you don't meet those standards, you can forget it. So it's partly true, but it's also important that parents actually spend some time doing research. Like, there are plenty of great articles out there, things written by doctors, by former athletes, by current trainers, by coaches, that can give you a little bit more of a real deal. Because I see all the way it's covered. Youth sports coverage is just ridiculously lazy. It's reporters and people going out asking parents, how much do you spend on this? Oh my God, you spend $10,000. The average fan's got, family's got to spend $10,000. You don't have to spend $10,000 a year.
I'm going to sound like him once. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Is that one, I think that professional sports has created this dynamic that from literally 7 years old on, they make everybody believe that they could be a professional. So it's driving this whole thing. It has gotten so out of hand. As much as you would think sports is healthy, You know, it has come at the cost of parents being involved in the community, of Lions and Rotary and the Chamber and things like that. And it's also sort of put this standard on children. And instead of having fun, instead of being able to, you know, play a basketball game, you know, in your neighborhood or whatever, it's sort of like, well, I've got to go and train this and do this and that. To me, I think it is a overreaction that is being drawn by professional sports to get every person involved. It's coming at the cost of children growing up naturally and of their parents.
I got a great counter for that. This is parents abdicating their responsibilities to understand what their kids are doing. If you're a parent and you're buying that, that's your fault. If you don't realize that the odds are against your kid, then that's your fault. All of this information is out there. It is all out there. You just have to take the time to find it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that sports offers that once a kid stops playing the sport is going to be really good. Teamwork being the number one thing, sacrifice, practice.
Learning to handle failure.
Handle failure.
Amen.
Handle success, all those things. And I think that for most kids, I think 99% of the kids are not going to, probably more, are going to go professional, are not going to go professional.
Yeah, 1% of 1% will
right.
be pros.
And so the idea at the age of 5 or 6, you're going to prepare your kid to be a professional. First of all, the one thing I would separate is, I had a daughter who played golf, but she didn't love it. She liked it. She didn't love it. We knew that. She played in college and then quit. But we knew that. But if you're living vicariously through your kid and you're putting the kid through all these paces and sending your kid to a baseball academy because you want your kid to be a professional and to practice 8 hours a day, but your kid doesn't really love it, might like it. But I know a bunch of kids of other, you know, other families. A kid was absolutely top of the notch baseball, went to a baseball academy in Florida. That's where he went to high school, then went to Brown University to play and quit after his third year because he went from something that he loved to something that he hated.
Yeah.
If it were me and I had a kid who was athletic, I would leave him to his own devices. And if he is out, let's say it's golf, he's on the driving range every day on his own, hitting 1,000 balls. That's a kid who loves it. And that's a kid you want to encourage.
But I think you have more parents wanting their kids to be professional sports stars than you do being doctors or lawyers or engineers.
There's still a lot of good that comes out of sports. I'm sure you teach your kids a lot of really positive stuff. So I don't think we ought to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, team sports is really, I agree with that, but I think it's gotten extreme.
Let me close out this segment by tooting my own horn a little bit. I was known in college track for my ability to handle failure. So,
and see the success that it's led to.
Yes. Welcome back, guys. DGS 439. Happy hot as hell Tuesday. Going to get even worse tomorrow. Worse Thursday, but then better on Friday. Any of you kids out there think you want to be a reporter for a news radio station? Let's talk to Maria Keenan and find out how she spent her day. Hey, Maria.
Hey. Oh, nice intro there, Dave. Well, I'm at City Hall, and I have been here since 11 o'clock this morning. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, citizens finally quit testifying regarding how they want to see the Rams' money spent. It got a little ruckus at the end there, so the board of this is a committee of the Board of Aldermen. It's a HUD's board, so they went into a brief recess. They are back now. They're haggling over things. This is going to involve numbers, so let me try and make this as simple as I can. $110 million to go to tornado recovery was already on the books. They had already approved that. That's happening. This is the number on it is Board Bill 22. Now they have voted an amendment to give another $10 million to that fund. So now it takes it to $120 million. And what they're discussing now is taking the interest from the bucket of money that goes to downtown, which is $55 million, and taking that interest and giving it to the tornado fund. Am I crystal muddy clear on this?
I'm following.
Okay. All right. So that's what they're doing right now, and they're doing a lot of amendments to this bill because what the citizens in the community are upset about is that downtown is getting $55 million. They want to see all that money go to tornado recovery because the need is so large in that area.
So who's pushing back on that? Are there citizens who are saying, no, some of this needs to go to downtown, or the aldermen themselves, or it all just pretty much been one person after another pushing for the tornado stuff?
It's pretty much been one person after another pushing for the tornado, except for early on in the morning when we had some business leaders who were on Zoom, were not in person, which didn't sit well with the community, the fact that they didn't come down here and testify in person before the committee. So the businesses obviously want to see this $55 million, but the community wants to see all that money go to the people who are still suffering. A lot of them still don't have homes. They're still displaced. We heard from people today that are down here who still are not in their homes as yet. So now what's happened is the community's taken a lot of animosity at the Board of Aldermen, this committee, because they went ahead and approved that $55 million. They say they're not listening to them.
What sort of ruckus was there at the end?
Well, it was, they're very vocal, and they will yell things out, and they won't be by the microphone, and they'll, you know, call things like shame or what are we going to do? We're going to shut it down. We had some chants going on. So it got a little bit loud and raucous at the end there, and everything's pretty quiet now, but a lot of people have left, too. It's not as many people as there were originally throughout the afternoon.
So, Maria, is this the kind of thing that this subcommittee will take to the full Board of Aldermen and they'll vote and it'll go to the mayor, or could it be a quicker decision than that?
No, after it goes to the committee, then it goes to the full board. They will vote it out of committee, but I don't know who exactly is going to buck this on the full Board of Aldermen, because the downtown is getting $55 million. So I would think the people, the aldermen that were in support of that $55 million going to the city, or rather to downtown, or going to be content with how it stands right now. At least I think so. But, you know, this is Sean Malone's beat. I don't usually cover City Hall much.
Yeah.
I knew he picked Sean's a heck of a day
somehow.
To be off.
Yeah, I knew it was his fault somehow. Go ahead, Rachel.
Maria, it totally is.
Maria, can you describe just kind of the morale of the aldermen at this point? You know, like, it's gone on for a long time. This has been an all-day meeting. Like, what's your take on just the overall vibe of the situation from their standpoint?
They're good. This committee consists of many of the progressive members of the Board of Aldermen. So when the community was telling them, this is it, we're going to vote you out. You don't pass this, you give that money to downtown, you're gone. The committee was kind of, I would say they were taking it personally because they feel like they've worked with the community, that they have their best interest at heart, and the community doesn't see it that way. So I can tell you real quickly, we've got Alderwoman Shamine Clark Hubbard, who is the chair. You've got Alicia Sonier, who is vice chair. You've got Rasheen Aldridge, who is all this, Michael Browning, and we've got one more that I'm leaving out there. But that's essentially the progressive members. Alderwoman Schweitzer. Mm. So the community is just pretty upset right now.
Mm-hmm. Maria, are you heading back home or are you still going?
Oh, no. It's still going.
Wow. Wow. All right. There you go. Maria Kina is at City Hall for KMOX. Hang in there.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Man,
that's a long day.
No, that sounds like kidding. No fun.
No fun.
Phew. Hopefully they've got the AC going in there. You know what I
Man.
Mean?
Woof. How's it hit you guys? I mean, maybe it's an unfair question just to hit you with, but I mean, I'll go first. I can't explain how much my heart goes out to the people in North County in the tornadoes. And if they were to decide we're going to give all of this to them, I wouldn't say a word. Mm-hmm. But being a downtowner, I don't live here, but I've been working here since 1990. I would like to see some investment in downtown.
Well, this is the hard part of the question, right? The hard part of the question is it better to fix the immediate problem, which is what we're talking about, right, with the tornado damage? That is an immediate problem. Human beings are suffering through this problem, and it's been going on for a long time. It's been more than a year. Do we solve the immediate problem immediately, or do we try to give ourselves more of a long-term solution that can also help them, but it won't be quick? And I think that's a terrible dilemma, because I don't think it's right to ignore those people. I don't think that's right. Their lives have been completely disrupted and changed and damaged. But then it also limits your ability to grow something for the future that could be longer term sustainable. And that's really the hard part about this, right? Because you have limited amounts of money. If you had twice as much money, well, do both. You know, that's really why it's such a difficult thing to me to even have an opinion on, because I feel terrible for those, for the people that have lost everything and for the damage that's done and it's not getting fixed. Is fixing that now better for them and better for the short term? Absolutely. Does it change anything for the course of the long term of the city? And I don't have a great answer to it, but it's hard to, it's because we're arguing people versus potential. And right, because in one case, we're talking about helping people directly right now who need help.
Well, it's a little bit analogous, little bit of what I perceive is going on between the mayor's office and the police commission, where it's like, yeah, you deserve every penny for the cops, but we also have to make, you know, the sewers run and all that other stuff. That if I were someone affected by North County tornadoes, I would be saying, hey, we need all this. But as a downtowner and someone who has seen it fall so very far from what it used to be, I think it's in everyone's best interest if we put at least some of those millions toward downtown.
I think that's a great analogy, Dave. And I think the aldermen have they're trying to strike a balance between, you know, just because you have dozens of people showing up to today's meeting being extremely vocal, their opinions do matter and their voices should be heard, but that's not representative of the entire city of St. Louis. They have the entire city of St. Louis to take into account when it comes to spending these funds.
Right. And that's why this is all very difficult.
Yes.
Because I can feel it. I would say I feel like I want to help the people that need help. And then I'm saying in my head, but is that best for all of the people around the city? Or will that slow down any potential growth? That could provide longer term benefits, and that sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to make that choice?
Just a plug for KMOX. This is why you listen to KMOX, because you have full time reporters like Maria Kina on the spot giving us live reporting, and then semi intelligent people doing analysis. And that's why I love being on KMOX. 455 just submitted here. A couple of fun facts. When John Williams played the two note Jaws theme, Steven Spielberg laughed, thinking it was a joke. He said he expected something more melodic, and John Williams replied, "The sophisticated approach you would like me to take isn't the approach you took with the film I just experienced."
Burn.
Ooh.
Snap.
He said, "Don't
mess with John Williams.
This soundtrack is going to make you reconsider everything you thought you knew about life."
And he was right. Probably the most iconic.
I mean, it's pretty great.
Dang it.
Especially with the way it builds.
Yeah. One quick one. Famous philosopher Voltaire made all of his money in 1729 when at the age of 35 he realized that he could buy every ticket in the French lottery and be guaranteed to win. He won the equivalent of tens of millions of dollars in one day.
Wow.